we're here. Can you guys believe it?
No. Episode 305. It's an exercise.
And I'm feeling alive. Yes, I did it.
Every episode, and we're as shocked as anyone that we're still here.
Yep.
How are you?
Oh, I'm doing well.
Yesterday you said you were, surviving, not thriving?
Yes, surviving, not thriving.
Is that how you feel today, or what do you feel?
I got a good night's sleep, so I feel a little bit better. Mm-hmm. I did some of my final, presentations and class and stuff, and so that checked the box, and, I'm on the come down from that adrenaline rush from all the stuff I had to do, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are you feeling about as you move into your final stages here of your
Suze, thanks for asking.
Program.
Oh man, it's a mixed bag of emotion, really. I'm starting to see, I have this, you can call it a bad habit, I guess, of really not wanting a good thing to end. So when I have a book I really love, sometimes I won't read the last five pages, mm-hmm. because I don't want it to end. And I'm like, no, I still love these characters. I have to still, the story can't be over.
Yeah.
And I can feel myself. We have this countdown calendar in our clinic. And so I can see as the days go down, and you'd think that that would start making me excited and I only have this much more time left. But as the countdown, gets smaller, I'm like, oh no, I start to panic because I'm like, oh God, real life. I can't just say, oh, no, I'm sorry, I'm in school right now. I have to actually go out.
Yeah, when you're in grad school, working. It's like Narnia. And you're in there.
It totally is.
And everybody's living their lives around you, but you're just stuck in this moment.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and Brain Candy Brainiacs out there, I was telling Susie just the other day how impressed I am with her, how she did it all pregnant and in the snow and climbing stairs and, when her husband was away traveling. Mm. And so
I don't recommend
mad
that.
Mad props. I don't either. I mean, I can't imagine. I barely recommend going, period. I get it now. I mean, education's important. It's so wonderful. Thank you so much. But
I'm envious of you,
man.
Though, because I had a different situation. So I don't even think anyone acknowledged when I finished my master's. Mm. It was just another day, truly. And I feel like everybody should get that feeling of completion and celebration.
Yeah.
I missed out on that.
You did, yeah.
What a ripoff.
Oh,
I could have
man.
At least gotten some bottomless tostada chips from Chili's or something.
Oh, that's so funny. it's the thing I'm looking forward to the most about graduating is the plan to have a dim sum Chinese lunch.
Yeah.
Chinese lunch. At with a lazy Susan.
Isn't that sad?
I was like, oh, I can't wait for that. But actually graduating, I'm like, yeah, whatevs.
Mm, man. Well,
yeah.
Carry on with your bad self. I hope it's a seamless finish to the end.
Yeah,
there.
I'm starting to put my feelers out there for private practice work. So well, hopefully somebody, thinks that I'm worthy of joining their squad.
Yeah, are you hireable? We don't know.
I'm hoping so.
Question mark.
I'm at least, they at least know that I can do a podcast or a try.
I know. We have no discernible skills.
Yeah. 305 episodes, proof of that. It was funny when I was doing my presentation in class, people were like, are you nervous? You're going to have to talk for 2 hours. I'm like, I've talked for 305 hours. I think we're good.
Right. It's hard when there's no banter, though.
Oh, that's true. But I create it no matter where I go, so.
Right. Well, let's get brainy. Let's get candy.
Let's do it. Are people sending you some good articles?
Not lately, actually.
I feel like I need to do a call to action for that, because I've noticed a dip as well. And I'm like, are people just busy with their own lives? God, imagine that. Is the news boring? Are there no poo stories out there?
Okay. Well, truth be told, I shouldn't say no, because I would say we get a handful each week. We did happen to get one recommendation from a gal named Jen, who was like, basically, Susie and Sarah, read this article or Google this person and you will be creeped out beyond belief. And it was a guy called...
Oh, yeah, yes.
Did you read it?
No, but I love anything that starts like that.
There's a guy called Danny LaPlante, and he was arrested eventually for murdering people. But the thing is that that's not even the creepiest.
But that's not it.
That's not all. He evidently, before he murdered people, had become obsessed with this girl, this young, mm-hmm. I don't know, teenager, his age. And he took her out on a date, but he had lied to her about the way he looked. Like, he had said, I'm, you know, tall, blonde, and all-American athlete or something. And then he shows up at her door, and he's like a greasy, lanky, kind of like low-life type.
Yeah.
And so she went out with him, but you know how you make up an excuse and you head home early? She did that.
Yeah.
But he was not going to give up. And he got enough information for her on that, from her on that date, to basically start haunting her, pretending to be her dead mom. And
what?
Knocking, like, on the wall of her.
Oh, fuck that shit.
Her and her sister had done one of those things where, seance? Where they try to summon the spirit of their dead mom. And the wall started knocking.
No, I can't. I have chills all over my body.
So they thought their dead mom was communicating with them.
Of course you did.
And so this went on and on, night after night. And long story short, eventually they discovered him in their house with, he was wearing the dead mom's like wedding gown or something.
Oh,
and like, I think he had a knife in his hand, and he had written on all of the walls, like, marry me, or I'm in your house, come find me, all this stuff. And the dad all along thought the daughters were just like troubled by their mom's death and thought that they were doing it to themselves. So they discovered this guy, and then they find in the house, he had all these crawl spaces. He had been living in the walls of their house for months.
No.
Yes.
No.
Wouldn't you die?
I mean,
die?
I believe it, but holy guacamole.
I'm not even doing a good job telling the story because it's so, the whole story is crazy, but you can Google.
I love when you're like, well, long story short, and I'm like, oh, I can't wait to read the long story on my own time.
Right. I think I did a tweet one time where I was like, you ever notice when someone says long story short, it's always too late?
Yeah, totally. My husband is totally like that. He always goes, what does he say? Yeah, he's like, long story short, or, you know, like, and I'm like, it's, you just told me a story for 5 minutes. You can't say that now.
Right. It's a long story long.
Yeah, long story long is how, totally how you should pitch everything.
But, like, the thing is that this guy went to jail for, or juvie for, like, not that long, because he didn't actually kill any of the people in this house that he had been living in. And so then he gets out, and then he kills all those people. Yeah. Cuckoo.
I didn't know it ended like that.
Right, like, that's just the part where after he murdered people, everyone was like, wait, what's this story about him living in crawl spaces?
You know, see, I feel like we need to take a look at some behavior that may indicate trouble down the road. And this is where the system, I mean, not this is where, the system kind of fails us everywhere, but this is one of those places where having services afterwards, making sure that mental health is taken care of, like, this guy was clearly, well, and now we know he's a juvenile, so he is, the system's really failing him when he's not getting, you know, the services he needs for
if you Google his own mental health. You can read how he had this terrible life and stuff. Of course. But
nobody's like that. I mean, this is clearly attachment injuries in childhood, the feeling of abandonment, the feeling of I have to have somebody or, like, they'll leave me and then what, you know. Yeah. And they should have seen those signs and been like, yeah, we should probably keep tabs on this guy. And
although, what are you supposed to do?
Well, I would blame his parole officer or, like, somebody who you're – I mean, I feel like that person who's supposed to be checking in on him and also, like, maybe making sure if you see already some, like, violent behavior or whatever, they're going to, you know, what are those meetings? Like, anger management, or they're doing some therapy. Like, there should have been some aftercare for this child.
Can you imagine if you'd done a seance
a murderer
and then there was knocking in your walls? I mean, you for sure would think you're being haunted.
100%. You know what's so funny is that's where everybody goes to first, is like, is there a ghost here? Remember the story that you were saying of the girl at her dorm and and she thought it was haunted and she was like,
we'd rather believe
who's
that.
Who's there? And he's like, it's me. I couldn't stop laughing when I heard that in the episode. I'm like, it's such a sad, scary story.
Wait, what made
imagining
you laugh?
The guy going, it's me.
Right. She's like, who's in there? And he's like, me.
Me.
Oh, God.
The way you said it, I was cracking up. But, oh, how scary.
Oh, I'll tell you, a lot of people know something else that's scary, which is super high interest rates. Am I
terrifying.
Right? It is terrifying.
Yeah. You'll be haunted by the nightmare of your bills.
The average interest rate on credit card debt is over 18% APR, which is insane. And some people
that
don't even notice their interest rate and don't realize that their APR is crazy. And Lightstream has a great service where you can refinance your high interest credit card balances and save on a credit card consolidation loan. And you can get a rate as low as 6.14 APR with auto pay. You can get a loan between $5,000 and $100,000. There's no fees. And the online application is super easy, and you might even get the money the day you apply. So that's really cool. And if you want to save even more, our listeners get an additional interest rate discount. The only way to get the discount, though, is to go to lightstream.com/braincandy, LIGHTSTREAM.com/braincandy, subject to credit approval. Rate includes 0.50 auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/braincandy for more information.
Oh, man.
Whew. Ah. I know, it's a lot. But yeah, so thanks to Jen for sending that. And I do, almost every time our listeners send us stories, they're like right on the money of what we're into.
Yeah.
Like creepy totally. Guys that haunt your house or pooping yep. by a principal.
Yep. Love it.
Yeah. And then also Rhiannon sent one.
Oh, I love her.
She sent this article about, you know how on Instagram, maybe you don't know this, but some of the quote unquote influencers are actually just like computer generated, like people that aren't people.
Yeah, there was one girl who, oh my God, I thought she was so beautiful.
Yeah.
And so cute. She had freckles.
That's her.
And yep.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, she looks perfect. And then I found out, not a real human. I'm like, this is messed up. That is why people have these fake ideas about these fake lives, and they're not even real humans.
Yeah, because like even the real humans you do follow, like that's not what their life looks like in real life. And
it's like infomercials for people.
Yeah.
You're like, ooh, that has all the bells and whistles. That looks like it'll be a great thing. And then you get it and you're like, this is shit.
Yeah.
And then it's like, you know, the same thing.
One thing about it in the article, though, that caught my attention and I wanted to get your opinion was they also, in addition to the gal that you saw, there's like this really beautiful, she looks like Lupita Nyong'o.
Yeah.
Her, mm-hmm. you know, that beautiful, rich brown skin, and you know, the mm-hmm. person that created it is a white man. And so some women of color are mad.
Yeah, I'd be mad at that too.
Okay. Why do you feel mad about it?
Because you're taking advantage of, like, oh, you know, I can't even put it into words. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, not okay.
It just
okay
seems
with it.
Wrong.
Yeah, it seems really wrong. And it seems like another way of, you know, to put it like, simplify it, like the white man using, you know, a person of color mm-hmm. for their benefit and not the benefit of the community.
Yeah, like fetishizing?
Yeah. Yes, totally.
Or tokenism. I mean,
yes.
Like the article said some women of color think that it's equivalent to like digital minstrel.
Yeah, I agree. I think so too. It feels kind of like, yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, it feels like that to me too.
Because the people would comment and be like, you know, there's lots of brown-skinned models you could have hired right. instead of creating a computer-generated one. But I just, I never would have thought of it. Again, this is one of those things where until someone brings it to your attention, it just doesn't cross your mind. And it's like, wow, there's all these ethical questions about AI and including this. Like, who should you, as a white person, be able to create digitally and then, like, promote and all that stuff?
Yeah.
Profit from?
Right. Yeah, that's what I don't like, is that they're profiting from something. And I have a strong feeling that this person is not doing anything to be an ally in other ways for the Black community. And I feel like that is why it feels like...
icky.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Because you're taking somebody's microphone and using it for your own benefit, not to... you know, help them and be an ally.
What's crazy is this guy, through that account, tries to raise money for, like, Black Lives Matter and stuff, which on one hand is good, but almost made me feel worse about it.
Yeah.
Like, I just thought, oh, that's even weirder. That he's almost putting that on as a fake thing, too. It's just weird.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's something to debate about and think about. How about that crazy ass woman that got attacked by the jaguar when she tried to get a selfie at the Arizona Zoo?
Oh my God. This is the gold. These are the stories. I love this stuff.
Do you not know about this?
No, I don't. Suze, I'm telling you, I like just
You're
this morning
Narnia.
Or last night got on you know, got online. That sounds like an old lady would say that. And saw the story about the schools and the you know, moms and parents who are, like, going to jail. So I'm like, what is happening in the world right now?
Right.
So I'm way behind.
Well, this woman was at the zoo in Arizona and really just wanted to get a picture with the, you know, those beautiful black jaguars that look like...
Who wouldn't want a selfie with one of those flesh-ripping beasts?
How bad do you want it?
Right.
But the crazy thing is somebody took video after she was attacked, and her gash was so gross and on all over social media. And I'm like, I don't want to see that.
Well, the irony that the thing that...
Right, that good
the,
point.
That it goes viral, her attack is the part that gets her all the likes and the follows, not the actual picture with the jaguar.
Do you think that Pete... This is a case of somebody who was just so, who needed that content so bad that they were willing to risk their life?
Yeah.
Or do you think they really were blinded to the point where they didn't even realize that this was risky behavior?
Oh, I think it's a combo of the two, but I think both of those are important things to look at. That there's two things going on, like our desire for, you know, like creating this, really like this fake image of herself, of like, what does that represent to her? Does she want to make it look like she's, you know, going to these exotic places and has, like, it's usually, you know, money, fame, power, all that.
Yeah.
And, you know, so what is it? I want to know, like, what's the intention behind the person who's taking it? What do they want to, you know, promote as far as, like, who they are.
There's an upper limit, though, on how good a selfie can even be. Like, even if you got the shot you wanted.
You know, when we talked a while back, you were talking about how there's a, you know, there's almost like a formula. There's like, okay, you go to the beach, you take this photo. You go to the, you know, mountains, you take this photo. You go this. It's like, you know, we have these almost like expected pictures places.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't stand that. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going up to Yosemite in a couple months. And I was thinking about how many people are just going to be missing out on the real beauty of it because they're going to just get that picture, you know. I don't know. I just feel like after all the stories of people who have, like, fallen off of the waterfalls and done this or something, like, there's no way that they're really enjoying nature. And if you're really mindful and in the moment and present, then you don't get hurt. You don't fall off the edge of a cliff. So you're really missing out on, like, the most beautiful places and the most beautiful things. And she probably didn't take time to look at the beautiful jaguar, to, like, see it. It's in it. In its environment, to maybe sense that it was about to attack her. We're missing a lot of cues that the world is giving us as we're inside of our machines.
Yeah, namely the freaking wall they put up to prevent you from going in, you dummy.
Yes. Come on.
I know.
I'm really hoping that the next generation, like, it becomes not cool to, you know, kind of how, like, helping out the environment is trendy and wonderful, which is great. And I don't want to say trendy, but like, you know, kids are into it.
Yeah.
It's like the cool thing.
Right.
And I hope that the cool thing will be, you know, mindfulness and being present versus escaping into your phone.
Well, one thing that does actually help the environment is recycling. And Rothy's shoes are made of recycled material. They're made of plastic.
Yes, ma'am.
But you'd never know it. That's what's crazy about it. Like, it's not like I can tell when I look at my Rothy's.
They're so
they're chic. And yesterday I spilled like gross Thai fish sauce on my shoe, my white Rothy's.
The white ones?
Yes.
Oh, Suze.
But I threw them in the wash, and that's the crazy thing. They came out, and they're still perfect. You cannot tell. Everything cleaned up, and that's what's amazing about Rothy's. They look great, and they're comfortable, but you can throw them in the wash. These are a lifesaver.
Yeah, that is great.
They have all different colors and patterns. They're always changing up the styles, and it really will blow your mind that they're made of recycled plastic because you'd think those are going to be ugly. They're so cute. We love our Rothy's. We know you will too. And right now, Rothy's has an amazing deal for our listeners. Use code BRAINCANDY to get free shipping with no minimum, free shipping and free returns and exchanges on your Rothy's shoe. And trust me, you won't return them. Go to Rothy's.com. That's Rothy's.com. And enter BRAINCANDY to get your new favorite flats and free shipping. No brainer. Shoes that are comfortable, stylish, and sustainable. And free shipping. Get yourself a pair today. Rothy's.com. Promo BRAINCANDY. Get the deal while it lasts. Okay. Yeah, she's dumb.
Yeah.
Jaguar 1, lady 0.
Yeah, I feel like nature 1 million humans.
The Darwin Awards.
Zero. Yeah.
Okay. What else did I want to share with you? Oh, there was like something on my list. Oh, this is stupid. But I was just talking to Adam the other day about, you know how they always say, like, if you had one superpower, what will it be?
Yes.
What would it be? I really don't know what you would say, and I needed to find out.
Oh. Oh, my God, you're so funny. Well, what would you say?
Well,
let me see if I can guess for you. Okay. Would you want the power to read people's minds?
I cannot believe you said that. Right. I just changed it to be that.
Did you really?
That's what I told him. I said, I want to be able to read people's minds. I want to know what
I know why, too.
Why?
Because I feel like you want answers to certain questions of, like, you want to know what? Yep.
That's hilarious. I can't believe you guessed it. It used to be invisibility because I hate people and I just want to walk around without people seeing me. Mm-hmm. What would yours be?
I would say the ability to move from one place to another place, like teleportation.
That's a good
Because I do so much driving.
Oh, that's
I'm
sad.
Over it. I want to snap my fingers and be at the grocery store, snap my fingers and be where I need to be.
Wow.
And... yeah.
Really?
I'd put way less miles. I'd probably lease rather than own a car.
Oh, my gosh. So I feel like the trunk question that we always ask people, what do you keep in the trunk of your car? We could actually say, what's your favorite or what superpower would you choose? Because I think it has the same effect. It shows where you are in your life.
You know, we do this this game, I guess you can sort of call it a game or like icebreaker. I work a lot with teens and kids in junior high. And sometimes it's hard to get them to start talking about these things or open up or, you know, talk about emotions and that stuff. So a nice way to kind of get them to do that is I have this big beach ball. And on the beach ball, I write a bunch of questions. And some of them are deeper. Some of them are sillier, like what's your favorite breakfast cereal? And some of them are like a way that I help support others is. And so we throw the beach ball and like, you know, stand in a circle and throw the beach ball and you catch it. You have to answer whatever question your thumb like lands on. And that's one of the questions that I have on there is what superpower would you want? Because I feel like just like you said, there's a lot of insight that you that can give you. When a child, when a teen says, I want to be invisible.
Yeah.
That makes us go, I wonder what this child feels like they're being ignored for or what, you know, there's a reason. There's a deeper reason behind whatever they're answering. Mm-hmm. And so it can help kind of make you as a therapist start asking the right questions about like, you know, or kind of change maybe how you would, you know, or what subjects you want to talk to the person about or So, yeah. I love that.
That's sad, though, that your superpower is just about how you hate commuting so much. Yes. That's really sad.
Oh, it's totally true. You know, I hate commuting. And then, you know, Susie, I was telling you this, but for my birthday party, I got wonderful gifts from friends, and it was so clear that all my friends recognized I was also a woman on the go, because everything was like portable,
right.
This,
travel kits.
You know, travel kit for lunch, travel this, travel that, you know, things for your lunch on the go. And I was like, yeah, they even see that I'm not ever in one place long enough to even have a meal.
It's so true, though, that when you are in that position, if you have the right gear and, like, equipment, it makes such a difference.
Yes, it does. Books on tape. Super important. Podcasts. Crucial. You know, lunch on the go. An insulated coffee cup so my coffee stays warm.
Yeah.
Or water stays cold. Thank you, Susie, for that.
Right? It makes a difference. Like, if you're set up. I have a weird thing about my car, though. Like, I like sitting in it when for no reason.
You know what? I've heard this from a lot of females about, you know, when we talk in any sort of setting, like group therapy or whatever, about where you, you know, like what you need to do to kind of de-stress or what feels good. And the answer I get from so many moms is, I just like getting in the car and just sitting or driving.
Yeah.
And maybe it's just being alone and feeling like that place, you know, there's no, you know, you're in the car and you're stuck and nobody can ask you, hey, I need this from you or whatever. You kind of get a moment to yourself or you're,
well,
so I get that.
It almost is like the invisibility superpower because you're in the world and you're out amongst people, but you don't have to deal with the crap.
Yeah.
Like, as you said, nobody can catcall you. Nobody will try to talk to you usually. You know, you're just in there protected, but you can still see everything.
Yes.
So weird.
Yeah. That is true.
And I like how, like, even when it's cold out, it's warm in the car.
Yeah.
So weird. I'm really unpacking.
No, I'm with you on this. And then when you have a comfy car, we both have the same car.
Yeah.
So I feel like we've got a comfy car that totally.
Yeah. Why are we turning into one person?
Yeah, no joke. Our clothes are starting to get that, too. I'm like, I need those white Rothys real bad in my life.
I didn't even think of that, how we have the same car.
Yeah, I'm okay with it.
What if you weren't? That would be really weird.
Right, that would be really weird. I think that, too. There's a girl at the clinic who has the cutest fashion sense, and she's so stylish. And every time I see her, I'm like, ooh, I definitely want that outfit. Ooh, I definitely am going to get that. She came over to my house the other night, and she was wearing this adorable pink sweater. And I was like, ooh, I'm going to have to own that.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that? And I went that night. Well, the next day, I went to the store where she bought it, and they were all sold out. And then I went on, like, a mad internet hunt to find this sweater. And I bought it, and I came up to her and was like, hope you're okay with me looking exactly like you tomorrow or the next week because I already bought it. She's like, oh, my God, it's fine.
Well, you are funny like that. You always, when I walk up to you, you're always like, what brand are those shoes? What, like, you like to know, because then you find it super cheap. You're like a magician that way.
Well, yeah. And I, you know, we were talking about it in the clinic, and I was talking about, you know, how cute, like, this gal is, and like how, like, you know, I step my fashion game up because, like, she's so cute. And the people in the clinic were like, well, yeah, you're stylish too. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't know how to be stylish. Like, it doesn't come naturally to me. Everything that I'm wearing is an exact duplicate of another outfit I've seen. So I have to ask all those questions or I will not know how to dress myself. I'm asking because I don't know.
How
do people learn about cute fashion? Like, I have friends who just, like, it feels like they just know what is cute and in style. And I'm like, do they do research on
this?
Yeah, but
you're
like
that.
Do they look at magazines?
Like, you'll be like, oh, yeah, I saw on Burberry's, you know, Paris Fashion Week collection. I'm like, how did you see that?
Oh, my God. Sometimes. Maybe it's just that I haven't seen that in a long time, so I feel like out of
yeah,
the loop.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. See, that's the kind of research. Like, it's like they're doing research, but I don't know where. And I need to do research there.
I bet you a lot of them are real into the blogs.
Yeah. See, I think it's that, you know, because I am like that with like home decor.
Yeah.
And I feel very confident in being stylish in decorating, but I don't think, I feel like it translates to my wardrobe. Like I have to try so hard for that and like think about, you know, I need help where with the house, I'm like, oh, it's very easy. This is how I have like a vision of what it looks like in my head.
Huh. I am shocked by this information.
Not at all. Yeah. I think it also comes from me having a little bit of body dysmorphia.
Oh.
Which I'll openly discuss. You know, after you were heavy for a long time, you kind of still look in the mirror and see yourself as that. So I have this like, you know, oh, I'm only allowed to wear these certain kinds of clothes. So I tend to pick the exact same thing that kind of like hides me.
Oh, man.
And felt like, oh, I shouldn't put a lot of thought because I've, you know, have these memories of being in like junior high and high school and, you know, being larger than the average size and feeling like, you know, oh, there's no point in even trying anything on. Nothing fits. I'm just going to stick with the, you know, overalls I've been wearing.
You got ripped off growing up in California because you had a skewed sense of what is normal body size.
Yeah, I sure did.
Because in the rest of the country, I mean, you were never overweight. You know what I mean?
Well, like, I mean, I was 189 pounds, and I think I was heavier than that at one point because I didn't weigh myself for like 4 years.
Oh, wow.
And this was, and I know I was having some gastrointestinal problems, and they were doing, you know, like work at the doctor, and I got on the scale, and that's when I was like, oh God, I got to make some changes because my natural body weight, like I'm usually at like 140 pounds, 145. And so that was like a big difference. And I was a size 15 when I was in junior high. And yeah, I was definitely, I noticed that I was
unhealthy
for like my lifestyle and what my body is used to.
Yeah, but you did get ripped off because in a lot of parts of the country that wouldn't even be
you know, that's true.
Noticeable.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And also, like, I shouldn't have worried about that. I just grew up in a family that was so concerned with weight. And so, you know, I see all the signs. Like, now hearing stories about my grandfather from who I had no relationship with, he wasn't a good guy. But I hear the stories that my aunt tells me about him, about his eating and him being a really lean man. And I put it together. He kind of had an eating disorder.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, those habits were absolutely passed down.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember being a child and my mom, you know, went during that time where, like you said, in many places I wouldn't be considered overweight. And also I wish somebody would have been like, this is just your body adjusting and you're dealing with hormones and emotional stuff and you're fine and love your body and love how it looks right now or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I remember multiple times where I was sitting and my mom would like grab my stomach and like pinch my chub and would, you know, say like, oh, we got to take care of that or something. And I hated it.
Yeah.
It was, you know, it made me feel so bad. And that just kind of stuck with me. And now, you know, you get it into your head. Like when somebody says one of those little things, now it's really like every time I sit down I think about that. Or, you know, we can't say those kind of things.
I know, they really stick with you.
Mm-hmm.
It's the worst.
Just like when my little brother told me I was tone deaf when I was like 10 and I stopped singing because of that, and then I, like, thanks to you, learned I am not tone deaf. And after, so I learned how to play the ukulele, I know I'm not tone deaf.
Yeah, whenever someone is, there is no mistake in it. It's like, wow, that is not close at all to the note.
Like, you probably couldn't play an instrument if you were tone deaf, right?
That'd be real hard.
Yeah, okay. So we're good. I'm fine. Everything's fine.
Another thing that's fine is stamps.com because
it's super fine.
You can ship stuff from your house or your office, wherever you are, without having to go anywhere. You can just print any class of mail, any size, anything. Print it out, slap it on your package, and the mail carrier will pick it up right from where you are. It's perfect for, like, if you send stuff for, like, if you resell your stuff or if you have a small business or just, like, if you're shipping a lot of stuff, it's a no-brainer. And it's such a deal because with stamps.com, you get 5 cents off every first class stamp and up to 40% off priority mail. And here's my pitch. Okay. It's a no-brainer because you save time and money. And our listeners get a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale without any long-term commitment. So just try it. See how easy it is and awesome it is. And you will be so happy. Just go to stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in brain candy. That's stamps.com, enter brain candy. Okay, moving on. Let's see, what else did I want to talk about? Well, do you know about how in China, they have to do, like, there's so many characters in their language that they have to basically just write them over and over again just to learn them from a very early age. That's just a part of Chinese education and Chinese culture, is like printing out characters over and over and over again, and kids hate it. And so this Chinese gal bought a robot that recreated her handwriting.
Wow.
And it did her, I forget the word, transcription or whatever it is, for her. And then she got caught and her mom like destroyed the robot. But I'm like super into this.
Okay. You know, this reminds me of the story that we talked about a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
About the teacher that had that call to action of, hey, if you can get in contact with Katy Perry, I'll give you an A. Okay.
How is this like that?
Because this child found a workaround for the thing that she was asked to do, which we could argue was almost smarter and took more creativity and thought and ingenuity.
Yeah.
And good for her. And instead, she got punished for it. I wonder if in another country she would have been praised for her ability to, you know, go against the grain and find a creative solution. Because if you come from a collectivistic culture that's like, no, this is the rules, this is how it is, and anybody who, you know, breaks away from that, it will bring shame to the family, or, you know.
Well, some people were mad about it. And we're like, that's not fair. That's cheating. And other people were like, what? That's so creative. We used to just rig up like two pencils to be like connected so that it would double write. So at least you'd finish in half the time. But
yeah, but that looks so obvious.
Have you done this?
Well, oh my God. Yes, because my mom used to punish us with having to write things, or write things like 100 times.
Yeah.
And so I would, like, if we would, so she would give us a spelling test, you know, give me a spelling test, and whatever words that I got wrong, I had to, like, write that word 100 times or whatever.
Oh,
and so I would come up with, like, creative ways to try to do it. Like, if the word was, you know, I don't know, creative, I would start writing a C on down every single line. Like, do different techniques. Like, maybe if I write 100 C's and then 100 R, but that's not any faster.
No, it just felt like a loophole.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I don't know. I kind of love that she did that.
I do too. I'm like, whatevs.
Whatevs.
Good for her.
Yeah. But I mean, I guess it's cheating.
I guess.
fine.
I mean, what's the benefit? You know, some of those things. I'm like, why do they need, you know, are we teaching them something that maybe they don't? I mean, they're going to, I don't know.
Right. And sometimes with assignments like that where everybody hates it, but you have to do it.
Yes.
It almost feels like just a rite of passage rather than an effective teaching tool.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. And sort of like, oh, I did it, so now my kids will have to do it, type of thing.
Yeah.
I feel like that about how doctors have to do 24-hour shifts, you know, in like the ER and stuff. I feel like the doctors,
I'm hoping they're changing that.
I think maybe they have begun changing it, but I mean, that's been a tradition for decades. And I wonder if it was that sort of phenomenon where it's like, I did it, so now you're going to suffer.
Yes. Oh, totally.
Because that just doesn't seem like a smart.
Oh, my God. We do that a lot.
We do, as parents, as just humans, bosses, anything. sort of like, I got through it. Let's see if you can.
Yeah.
But whatever.
Interesting.
Yeah. We have a fun, we have a guest today and I'm so excited about it. So
let's hear.
Who's here? So, Carrie Rawson is the author of my March book club pick, and she wrote the book, A Serial Killer's Daughter.
Yes.
My Story of Faith, Love, and Overcoming. She's the daughter of the BTK killer, who, if you don't know, is a serial killer who was caught in 2005, who had killed people before Carrie was born, but also during her childhood as well, and she did not know. And I just can't get over her and how impressed I am with her. So really, it's not an interview as much as it is me telling her how awesome she is.
Love it.
Because
love those.
Sarah, can you, let's just put ourselves in that position. Tell me, can you even conceive of that? Where they show up at her door and say, have you heard of the BTK killer? And she's thinking, has he killed my grandma? Like, who, never thinking, I know the BTK killer.
Yeah.
What that would do to you in that moment, the trauma of hearing that.
Oh. Well, I mean, not in all ways, but in a small way, I can relate to having a parent who is a monster.
Mm-hmm.
Who is, you know, hurt people.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think about how my brothers reacted, and they have that, you know, I knew because I was a victim of his, but for my brothers, it was that, what? Oh my God. Like, I can get that. I can see that. And
I was telling her how, so I follow her on Twitter and I know that she receives a lot of really hurtful messages, as you might suspect, from people who are angry about what her dad did and maybe feel,
why are they taking it out on, why are they, she didn't do it.
I know. I think
for the same reason they shouldn't take out the things that my dad did on my brothers and me.
I think that there's a sense of how did you not know? I think,
but that's
maybe not.
That's the whole piece of the, you know, what these guys who are perpetrators do is they're so good at hiding and they're so good at blending in and keeping it a secret. And that's part of the, you know.
Well, and I've read a lot of, when I was reading the book, it rang true to me because her dad was similar to how my dad was in terms of just like general demeanor. And you growing up in my house, you did not go through my dad's drawers or stuff.
Oh, wow.
And so it's the similar thing where like, what do you, they're not going to go through his stuff.
No. Right. If that's been, my God, I didn't even think about that, Suze. You are so right. If you have that kind of,
And it's unspoken,
you know, parent.
Too.
Yes. Ooh.
And because they eventually found a false bottom in their floor where he kept, like, the mementos and trophies from it. So, like, in theory, I suppose somebody could have found it. But I'll tell you what, if we had a false floor in our house somewhere, no one would ever know. Like, that's just not a thing with families like that.
Uh-huh. And I can imagine the father being very passive. For, you know, like people like that tend to be, it's like black, you know, these almost like two sides.
That's
to
right.
Them,
and that's how he describes it.
Yes. And I would imagine that she got a little, and maybe you as a child got this too, a little taste of the other side.
Yes.
When they pushed that boundary. So like she maybe opened a door she wasn't supposed to. And all of a sudden that switch,
it exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
I can totally see this. And then that is so terrifying because it doesn't match your, you know, image of who this person is that you never ever want to see that again. So you don't ever do it.
Let me just quickly take a break before we carry on and I finish my intro of Carrie. I just want to tell you about Robinhood. Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos all commission-free, while other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade. Robinhood doesn't charge any commission fees, so you can trade stocks and keep all of your profits. Plus, there's no account minimum deposit needed to get started, so you can start investing at any level. The simple, intuitive design of Robinhood makes investing easy for newcomers and experts alike. View easy-to-understand charts and market data and place a trade in just four taps on your smartphone. You can also view stock collections, such as 100 most popular. With Robinhood, you can learn how to invest in the market as you build your portfolio, discover new stocks, track your favorite companies, and get custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving listeners of the Brain Candy Podcast a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help you build your portfolio. Sign up at braincandy.robinhood.com. So I just wanted to say, first of all, I hope everyone reads A Serial Killer's Daughter, My Story of Faith, Love, and Overcoming, because, listen, if you want to hear about the gory details of these crimes, you can find that online or elsewhere. But with this book, what you're going to get is what it's like to experience the trauma of, well, a family secret or... Basically, she's a victim of him as well.
Yes.
And I was talking to her about how when the real victims, you know, their families, everyone has compassion for them because they're so clearly the victim of this killer. But she's a victim too, but yet there's not as much compassion for her, even though her life was ruined and she lost everything she thought she knew in just that moment. And so I have a lot of compassion for her, and I'm so impressed with how she's staying positive and trying to help other people.
Yes.
But...
Oh, my God. It's great. And I'm so excited to hear this because I just downloaded the audiobook, and I will be listening to this. Oh, as soon as I get in the car.
I wonder if she's the reader. Like, I wonder if she's...
I think she is.
Is she?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So that makes me even more excited because I'm going to get a little... taste.
I mean,
of it
this
right
is
now.
Gonna sound crazy, but when I was talking to her, I think my voice even cracked because I almost started tearing up, which is so selfish. Like, oh, this story's about me. It's obviously not, but I was so moved by her.
I think that's great that you that's good. That's connecting, and that's like, you know.
I really was. I was just like, I get mad when it's cloudy for too many days in a row, and trying to overcome what I can't even conceive of.
Yes.
And
And for the record, she does not narrate it, but I am excited to hear it.
You're going to love it.
Yeah. And I couldn't have narrated a book talking about those kind of things.
Yeah, she describes
how
triggering.
It would have been like secondary victimization, like secondary trauma, if just writing it all down.
I saw in another interview where she talked about writing the book, and she said she had to ask for an additional 10-month extension because it was so traumatizing.
Of course.
Right.
It is. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yes. And the more self-aware she becomes, unfortunately, the more traumatizing it could be, because you, like, go to these lengths to kind of keep, like, compartmentalize that.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as you start to explore that and
you can totally relate to this. Okay. And I think everyone can on some level. Hers is just more extreme. But you know that thing where you live your life and let's say you have an impression about your childhood and all that, but then you get older and when you look back on it, you are looking through a different lens.
Yep. Yep.
On new information and experience and wisdom and all that stuff. And you see things differently. You might realize, like, my dad wasn't that nice or whatever it is. And her book does such an elegant job of telling the story, but then almost casting this lens on it where it's like she's looking back and rewriting her own timeline of, like, we went to Disneyland. It was amazing. 2 months later, he killed someone and I didn't know it. And so now she associates Disney with... what she knows
Murder.
Now. Yeah.
Oh, my God. That is so... Okay, I can't wait.
Okay.
I'm so excited.
All right. So welcome to the show, Carrie Ross. And please read her book, A Serial Killer's Daughter. And don't forget to join our book club, too, because we have so much fun in our book club. And we do get to have in-depth discussions about our books. And we meet every month on what do you call that? Like a live chat, and you guys can write your questions and we answer them as we go. It's just really fun.
Oh my God. There's laughter. There's tears.
Every time we laugh, we cry.
There's definitely wine. It's so much fun.
But anyway, welcome to the show, Carrie Rawson. All right, Carrie, thank you so much for coming on the show. What an honor. I'm so happy to have you.
Thanks for having me.
And I want to know, first of all, how sick you are of doing these interviews.
I got a break for a few weeks after traveling in January and February, but the break was I was too ill to do interviews.
I know. That's what I saw on Twitter. I'm like, oh, man, she's draining herself. That's terrible.
Yeah. I had some trauma-wise people contact me quietly and say, I think your body is rebelling. And I was like, you know what? Like, emotionally, I'm feeling okay. And they're like, no, your body knows.
You're like, take our word for it.
Yeah. And I mean, I know that too. Like, I'm pretty self-aware and, you know, I tell other people and then I very stubborn and don't listen to my own self. So, yeah, my body completely rebelled. And I just kept getting sicker and sicker until I like waved the flag and was like, okay, no more interviews for a few more weeks. Like, I'm sick. Leave me alone.
I'm sure. I really appreciate, though, that you did write the book and that you're willing to talk to people because I think you're doing such a service. So I appreciate your sacrifice.
I'm trying. I mean, I've been through so much. It feels good on this side to actually have wrote the book because it was brutal to write it. And I didn't even know I would be able to complete it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I'm getting I've got an inbox full of people's messages saying, you know, I'm helping them with, you know, past issues that they've had, of abuse or trauma in their life, or, you know, they have a family member in prison, or, you know, they're dealing with something. So, you know, it feels good to know you're helping people, but it's also hard, seeing all those like messages come in right now.
Right. Cause they're kind of feeling like you're the ambassador. You're the person that's speaking out, but it takes its toll on you, I'm sure. So I can't even imagine how you're feeling.
Yeah, I've got a lot of incoming right now that I'm not sure what to do with. You know, I almost have that personal boundary rule of not personally replying just because of, you know, things that have happened in the past where people have replied to me. So, you know, I'm trying to get the word out, you know, to get to therapy or, you know, get to a shelter if you're in a domestic abuse situation or go to the police. But again, like,
you can only do so much though.
Yeah. You're only one person. You can only do so much. You know, I've been in therapy, you know, recently, like the last 3 or 4 years, you know, and I had therapists say, you know, that's not your job.
Yeah.
You know, like people come to you because you're public and you're out there, but
well,
you know,
I know,
try to refer people, so.
And you certainly didn't ask to be in this position, so it's a lot to ask of you to sort of be a collective therapist for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have the training, you know.
Yeah.
Like, it's best to be paired up with somebody, say if I was at a conference and have other people come in that are trained. You know, I mean, I don't know how to get the word out to people, like, you know, go get help, you know, like I honestly, I just tweeted it on Facebook, like again, the hotline numbers for domestic abuse and suicide prevention, you know, but honestly, like, I feel bad that I can't personally reply to everyone, but also it takes a toll on me too.
Yeah.
So I really have no idea how like therapists do it.
Me neither. My my co-host on the show has her master's in family therapy, and I'm always like, I do not envy you. That is a tough job.
Yeah. I have no idea how they separate, you know, their own lives from everyone else's lives.
They're doing the Lord's work. That's all I know.
They have the strictest boundaries of anybody I know, too. So
you should adopt their viewpoint in that way too, because otherwise you're going to get depleted, don't you think?
Oh yeah. I mean, it definitely, the problem is like people are saying like, you know, why don't you get a social media man, or why don't you get a, get, you know, an assistant to screen through your emails. And we might be, I might be getting to that point, but you know, even just to screen them, it wears on you because you have to read the hard messages, or, you know, you can't reply, or, you know, the trolls, you still have to screen through it. Somebody does. So, you know, people are like, don't let it affect you. And I'm like, well, if I read it, it still affects me, you know?
Yeah.
Even if I file it away pretty quick.
Yeah, so it can't not. You're a human being.
Right.
Well, tell me about the actual process of writing, because to me that would be so daunting just approaching this project. Did you, when you dived into it, did you feel like you already knew what story you wanted to tell?
You know, I was wrestling, even if I had the right to write the story, you know, early on I was having conversations, with my literary agent, who's just been amazing. His name's Doug Grad. You know, like what can I bring to this, or what can I tell, or what do I have the right to talk about, you know? And, you know, he's always been incredibly supportive and say, you know, this is your story and you can write it. You know, I think I really struggled with my father's crimes and where do I even put them in the book and to what level do I write them? You know, I honestly didn't even know where to put them really until edits. My whole first part where you see my dad's crimes up against my life or after I was born, that actually came out in edits. I had had, you know, some information there at his trial where, when it had come out. But my editor said, you know, I think we need to put something up front. So we completely imploded my first part that I had in draft. And I rewrote, I mean, I wrote like 6 or 7 new chapters and edits. And that was after copy edits. So then we had to kind of go back and clean that up a little bit. But yeah, I mean, sometimes with writing, you just don't even know what you're going to say or where you're going to say it.
Right. It's just a blank page staring at you. Well,
right. I mean, I didn't, but like some of that faith came out when I was writing. I realized, you know, that God had been with me throughout the whole thing. Yeah. You know, there were things I felt like from a faith aspect that God wanted me to see that I didn't see till I sat down and wrote.
You know, I was really moved by your book, as I'm sure everyone is, in part because you did such a beautiful job of showing how this situation has changed how you even processed your own memories and the timeline of your own life. And I was so impressed with the elegance of how you described your story, and then you almost like put it through the lens of this new information after they visit your house and break the news to you. Is that how you feel about your life? It's almost like a before and after?
Yeah, I mean, I'm notorious for talking before and after. I mean, I tried, it's hard with writing to show that repetitiveness. I mean, some people, you know, have even reviewed it lower because they're like, well, she repeats herself. And I'm like, well, everybody I know that's experienced trauma repeats themselves all the time. like it's called, I call it trauma brain. Like, it's hard to show in writing, you know, when you have a loop stuck in your head for two years with PTSD. I mean, obviously you can't write it for 2 years, you know, but like I tried to show what it's like to go into therapy 2 years later and be back, you know, 2 years before in this horrific moment of your life. Everything since the arrest, it's before the arrest, after the arrest. I mean, my family still does it. My mom, you know, we say before, after. We don't even have to say what before or what after, or, you know, before dad, after dad. I tried to show that, you know, at the 1 year anniversary, you know, these marks of time I still feel now. You know, I felt the anniversary this year even. So I definitely think in like the before and the after of his arrest. And then, you know, it took a long time to reconcile what my father did. You know, 7 of his murders were before I was born and 3 were after when I was little. So you're trying to reconcile this life that you're finding out about as a young adult with the life you had or the life you've been told about. And it takes a long time to piece that together. I tried to show that in the book that, you know, these things are happening here in this timeline, but I didn't know about them until, you know, 30 years later.
Right. And I don't know why anyone would be critical of that, because I thought it was such a powerful rhetorical device that you used, where you can help the reader understand what's going on in your brain, which is so impressive that you were able to accomplish that. I imagine, though, just the writing process was also very draining and triggering. Is that the right word?
So when I started, I ended my book in 2012, but when I started speaking up in the media in 14, I did this long piece where I worked with the Wichita Eagle in Kansas, my hometown paper, for several weeks. And that ran near the anniversary in 2015. And when that large piece came out, it got a lot of good reception. It was helping a lot of people. But, you know, I basically imploded after mm-hmm. that ran, and ended up back at the same trauma therapist I had seen in 07 that I write about. So I spent another 6 months with her because I couldn't sleep. I was having really bad night terrors. And I went in and told her what, you know, everything that had happened. And she said, you know, she goes, I think you've kind of just unpacked everything that was haphazardly stored in your head. Mm. She's like, if you think of a file cabinet, she's like, you had just stuffed all this stuff in there. And she's like, now you've just sort of thrown it all up. You've just dug in there, dumped it all out, told the world.
Yeah.
And you haven't done it with the right support system completely in place. So she said, now we're going to go take everything you've haphazardly pulled out and we're going to go file it like neatly for the first time.
My gosh. It's so powerful. So,
yeah. And so I, you know, you're like, oh, okay, I realize what I've done now. And now you're spending like 6 months weekly in intense trauma therapy trying to fix
it. Trying to arrange the files.
Right. And, arrange 30 years of, well, oh you know, God. At that point, 40 years of memories. And so I actually took the Wichita Eagle book in about my father. It was published in 07 by four journalists who had covered the case and knew it very well. And they actually worked with the Wichita police on it. So it's completely vetted. And I wrote about that book in my book. I had even thrown away my hard copy of it. And I had to go back to Amazon and buy another paperback of it. So, and I also have it on Kindle because I needed it for research for writing. So I own, you know, and then somebody gave me a first edition hard copy. So now I have like two copies of the thing. I can't get rid of it. So I took it into therapy and we worked line by line through my father's crimes for months so that I could finally come to terms with it and process it. I couldn't have even wrote to the level that I did if I hadn't done that. I needed to go deal with it personally in a safe space, you know, where you can yell and be mad or cry or just process what you need to process. And then I was finally able to sit down and write what I wrote.
Do you feel like you're in a no-win situation where no matter how you handle it, people are going to be critical?
Oh, yeah. I mean, my husband tries to remind me. He's like, you're not going to win everybody over. That's impossible. You know, he's like, he reminds me, like, not everyone likes J.K. Rowling or not everyone likes Harry Potter, you know. Yeah. So, like, he tries to remind me of these giants in writing and literature. I mean, he also tries to remind me that, like, people are angry. He thinks they're mainly angry at my father, especially people back in Kansas. You know, for what he put the families through and my family and the community. And they're kind of directing it at me because they don't have anywhere else to direct it at.
That is exactly what I have written down, that it for me feels like anger displacement, that you're in such a bizarre position where, like, the victims' families, everyone's compassionate towards them. But for your family, your victims as well, but some people aren't compassionate and almost like put you in the same category as the person that committed the crimes. Is that how it feels for you?
It does. There's only a small element that hits me in that way, but they hurt. I mean, they just seem to know how to hit. You know, and people are saying, well, that's just the basement troll, like some guy living in his mom's basement. And I'm like, that might be the case, but sometimes you go look at these people's accounts and they're legit like people's grandmothers.
Oh my God.
You know, like one of the worst that hit me, she, you know, like her account is legit like she's somebody's retired grandmother in Arizona. And I was like, wow, that really hurts. Aww. You know, like, I'm just going to delete your 10 messages you spent an hour on overnight hitting me with. But, you know, I've been trying to respond a little in social media. I try not to, you know, post what somebody says. We delete and we ban and we block. We also screenshot because,
yes,
I mean, the reality is, like, I might need to contact law enforcement. So, I mean, I don't think people realize they're cyberbullying you, you know. And I don't think these people would say this to your face if they actually knew you. So I'm not sure what that is right now in society, but, you know, I get upset about it. My husband tries to remind me where it's coming from, or, you know, somebody is not stable themselves. Yeah. So,
well, and it's not, whatever it is, it's not about you, even though it's directed towards you. And it's such a shame, and I'm sorry you have to deal with it. And I'm so impressed with how you try to stay positive and have grace and have a message of hope. And that's what I'm just want to thank you for, because you're such a great example of, like, a person that can turn something really painful into something positive. I'm sure it's a struggle, but I just want to say that that's really impressive and amazing.
Thanks. It's been a long process to get here to be able to talk openly about it and to still be functioning. And, you know, I just try to keep myself grounded and, you know, focus on my day to day and then deal with things as they come. And
was there a particular moment where you thought, you know what, I'm ready to share this story? Or what was that like in your brain where you're like, okay, let's do this?
I think it was small steps. You know, I tried to show there and there the end of the book of, you know, in my church community of trying to share with people.
Yeah.
You have to learn how to share and not just drop this massive bombshell that is your father.
Right,
you know, so
right.
You try to find, like, the safe people, you know, the girlfriend you can share over a glass of wine, you know, as you're hanging out, or, you know, a small group of community or, you know, you trust. I mean, you don't always get it right. Even now, I don't always get it right, you know, when I'm talking or sharing. I think, you know, at the end of the book, I show, you know, I started speaking publicly. That was difficult. But I, like, as soon as you see that positive impact of people being affected, you know, and turning around and going to help, or, you know, I've helped a couple people, you know, with some domestic situations, pretty serious ones. So, you know, when you know you are helping people, something you're saying is resonating with them, you know, you sort of get that push to keep going, even though it's difficult. I think when I hit the media in 14, I just sort of exploded and wrote an editorial and then blew up on the phone with a journalist. You know, I was not thinking at all that I was news, and I ended up on the front page, like, internationally overnight.
Well, what do you think about the fact that people are so intrigued by true crime, et cetera? Is that, do you think that that's disturbing, or what are your thoughts?
You know, I think it's just because it's such a human element and it's so common. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at, like, abuse statistics, what, 1 in 4 women and 1 in 6 men have been assaulted or, you know, worse. So, like, I mean, it's so common to have lived in a domestic abuse situation or be assaulted or raped. I mean, I just don't think people talk about what they've personally been through. And then crime, I mean, if you haven't known someone or lost someone to crime, you know, you usually know somebody that's committed one, or, and if not that, then, you know, it's in your news every day. So, I mean, I think it's just so prevalent right now in our society. I mean, maybe it always has been. It's just, I don't know if we're more violent now, or we just, you know, talk about it more, or there's more news that covers it. You know, I'm not sure what it is.
Were you ever one of those people that was interested in it before?
I'm more of a fiction reader. Yeah. I mean, So, I used to read, like, Stephen King with my dad and other, like, you know, detective books, and Agatha Christie and Sherlock Holmes and, you know, more modern ones. So, I mean, I grew up on kind of like that red and black cover, you know, crime fiction books. You know, I would share them with my father. You know, I never really looked at it in from the true crime perspective. You know, honestly, like the first true crime books I read were about my own dad.
Oh my God.
So, you know, I think sometimes I'm getting some blowback because, you know, the true crimers were hoping for like a really intense true crime book for me. But I'm like, that's not what this is. This is a memoir. You know, you're going to get everything. You're going to get some true crime. You're going to get faith. You're going to get like the good relationship I had with my dad and then everything that happened. You know, you're not like, I don't consider my book true crime, but you know, it's getting filed there in the bookstores. I don't have any control over that.
Right. Of course. Yeah.
Like I didn't have control over the cover or the title. So, you know, I would just hope people would approach it with an open mind and realize that it's a memoir through my eyes, you know.
Tell me what it's like to mourn someone who's still alive.
I mean, I didn't even realize early on I was, you know, grieving or mourning the loss of this man. Some of that you don't even really see until hindsight or even sitting down to write and realize, like, you know, when my family gathered together for safety that first week after my dad's arrest, it actually did feel like we had gathered for a wake or a funeral.
Wow.
You know, because we've gathered since then for family funerals and it has that sort of same feeling. There's just not that in goodbye or that, you know, tradition you have of a funeral. So
in a way you kind of went through the same rituals that anybody,
right.
Yeah. It's the same kind of feeling.
Yeah, you have those same emergency phone calls going back and forth all over through the family and trying to make sense of what's going on, you know, and then you're traveling, you're trying to get plane tickets and travel and be together. And then you're just sitting together trying to manage things.
And you're hiding from the media. That's
an
element.
So
most
now
of us
you're hiding from the media and you're trying to process, you know, you have a lot of incoming phone calls and a lot of confusion. And you know, you're gathered with like your closest people. So you're trying to make sense of things together, but you also know everybody has their limits. And so I tried to show like, you know, letting my mom have space or her letting me have space or my grandma buying me a Harry Potter book so I could escape,
right.
You know, my granddad's in the newspaper. Like we all just have our ways of escaping even in a, you know, as a family. So just being there and gathered together was a huge step in my healing and, you know, is what lifted my initial physical shock that I had been in for several days.
When you put the book together, one of the bigger sections is about a trip you guys took to the Grand Canyon. I was wondering why you chose that story as something that you thought was really important to include.
I think because, I mean, I wanted people to see my relationship with my dad in a natural setting. Mm-hmm. And I knew that story, like, I knew that was an interesting way in a long form, compelling way to show him and I, you know, also in a situation where, you know, he basically he had made poor decisions and got my family in trouble. Mm-hmm. You know, all of us could have lost our lives down there. My cousin, my brother, me, my dad. You know, here's me. I'm a young adult. I'm 19. I'm trusting my dad with my life. I assume because he's researched and read and, you know, he says he knows what he's doing. Like I always just trusted him no matter what we were doing, you know, and then I quickly realized when we got down there on this really rough trail that, you know, my dad was way in above his abilities and I was above my abilities, but you also just keep thinking it's going to get better and you don't want to turn around, you know? And so for me, I actually, that part I actually wrote first, because I needed a safe place. I needed a safe place to learn how to write. And I like to do dialogue and I needed a place where I had to go force myself to remember what my dad looked like. I had to go get photos and, look at his clothing and his and what he wore. And I had to force myself to find my dad again because I was still stuck in, like, dad was BTK. And I don't, you know, I didn't want to think about, like, you don't want to think about how your dad sounds and how he moves.
Yeah.
After you find out what he was capable of. And so you, to write though, you have to go find that person and think about what they look like. And, you know, and so, you know, I had to almost get over my fear of my father as BTK and go back and just find my dad.
Wow. That's very powerful. And I mean,
that's why you see that so much in the first half of the book. I mean, that's just me trying to hold on to the guy I knew. Because I wanted people to see what I had experienced and knew so that they could see and feel the loss of it.
Well, you did a fantastic job. And even though your circumstances are so extreme, I think everyone knows that feeling, realizing their parents are not perfect and life is very complicated and messy. And you've handled everything so beautifully. And I'm sure it doesn't always feel like that to you, but I just want to congratulate you both on writing the book and also being such a inspiration for so many people. We always ask one last question to all of our guests because we believe that what you keep in the trunk of your car can tell us where you are in your life. So, Carrie Rawson, what do you keep in the trunk of your car if you have a car?
So we've got clothes for the kids because my kids are they just had birthdays, so they're 11 and 8. So we have extra clothes for them just in case. You always need extra stuff for your kids.
Yes.
And then there's like the snow broom to get the snow off the top of the small SUV. I'm sure there's a spare tire back there. I think there's some of my husband's hockey gear right now. He goes and plays pickup hockey.
Oh my God. This is such a good trunk.
Yeah. So, I think that's about what's back there right now.
You guys are ready for anything.
Yeah. There's stuff rattling around back there. I promise you.
So. Well, here's my hope for you. I loved your book. I know our listeners are going to love your book. I just hope you keep writing. I want to read other stuff because you're a beautiful writer.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird. Like I definitely want to go write. It's just so hard.
Yeah.
You know, and it takes so long. And then you're like, do I even have anything left in me to say?
Yeah. You don't have to do it now. I'm sure you're tired and drained, but you know, maybe.
No, I mean, I fell in love with writing. I mean, the idea would be to just like completely go down in life and be a hermit and go live in a cabin, and like write my guts out. That's sort of that dream. And, but then reality is like, no, you have to stay engaged in the public life.
Yeah. Maybe we could do a compromise, you know, just check in with us every once in a while and
right. We'll
be happy. But we're all cheering you on. And I really hope you feel supported because there's a lot of people out here that are rooting for you and are really impressed and amazed by you.
I definitely feel the support and love. I hope people know that I do. You know, I try to read as much as I can of people's positive messages, and it does mean the world to me after everything I've gone through. You know, I get mad about the trolls, so that's when I get mouthy. So
I like a little sass. I don't think you should.
Oh, there's a lot of sass in here. It tries to like stay in control, but it comes out occasionally.
I support that. As you know, I'm sassy too, so I like a sassy gal, but thank you again, and I hope everyone reads your book and that you get nothing but praise and accolades forever.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it. Thanks for talking with me.
Yeah, you're off the hook, and I'll let you know when we post it.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you so much, Carrie.
Mm-hmm. Bye. Bye.
This podcast is brought to you by Wave Podcast Network. Check out all of our shows, including the Brain Candy Podcast, I Don't Get It, Coffee Convos, and Let's Talk About It.